Crema.
Ya verá el que choca con el defensor y con autoridad la clava 2. Patrulla Juvenil, una vez más con autoridad y con la zurda esta vez.
Broadcasting live.
Yes.
From Rocket Mortgage Fieldhouse on the sunny shores of beautiful Lake Erie.
Good rebound. Dumps off to Allen. Allen spins and flushes. Oh, my.
Whoa. Turn your back and throw the hammer down.
In downtown Cleveland.
Hello, Cleveland. Hello, Cleveland.
You've tuned in to Wine and Gold Radio.
Hot Rod steals the ball. Down the floor, wham, with two hands.
Now, here are your hosts, Rafa, J-Mike, and Joe G.
Hello.
Hey, everybody, and welcome to episode 5. It's Woo-hoo. Hard to believe. Episode 5 of Wine and Gold Radio. I am Joe G. To my left is Rafa Hernandez Brito. I'm really working on that. I think I'm getting better. Thanks.
Pretty good.
And then over there is Juan Miguel. Yep. John Michael, the voice of the Cavaliers. Guys, our perfect record was ruined last night. I hate to say that, but it really, we were 4-0 going into last night, into, I should say, Wednesday night's
you
game.
You mean our podcast was undefeated.
Our podcast was undefeated, 4-0. We took one on the chin. Clippers, good game, competitive game, but we finally had our streak snapped last night. Tough game. Clippers just shot the hell out of the ball. I mean, what can you say?
Especially Paul George. And I, before we let our guy in here, you know, I got us. Give him a segue. Mm-hmm. I knew it was going to be a long night because my father always told me to watch out for guys that have two names in their name.
Two first names.
In the two first names, you know. And then we had Kawhi Leonard and Paul George. So what do you think of that, John Michael?
Yeah, well, when it comes to those two, that's a good team, by the way, isn't it, guys? I mean, that's and that's, you know, obviously the understatement of the NBA. But this is a team that, to me, it was shocking the way they exited last season. I mean, I don't think anybody expected – this team to get knocked out in the second round, particularly after they had a 3-1 lead over Denver. This team, I think we saw it on display, to me, is built for the playoffs. I think their bench took a little bit of a hit with Montrezl Harrell no longer there, Jamichael Green. But again, when you look at what Tyronn Lue likes to do, I mean, isn't that the vintage, you know, Tyronn Lue constructed team? You know, have the ball in the hands of a Paul George or Kawhi Leonard when everybody collapses, kick it out, shoot the three. I mean, this team is shooting threes at 42%. Is shooting threes at 42%. I mean, Lou Williams is shooting threes at 36%. He ranks 10th on the team in three-point percentage. So, I mean, these guys are lighting it up from all over the place, and it was on display. So, some nights you tip your hat, right? I mean, Paul George went 8 of 9. From three, so
they hit their first five threes.
Right? Yeah, that's a heck of a ball club the Cavs played last night. You know, you move on. It's to me, guys, it's almost like, look, the Cavs, if you're looking at phases of the season, right? I mean, the Cavs weathered the injury storm, right? I mean, that was a difficult, difficult portion of the season. Come out with a certainly a respectable record, right? Now, February, the opponents, everything else, the games are coming at you fast and furious. Until the break, the Cavaliers play only one team with a losing record. That happens to be Oklahoma City, and they're no picnic either. They're playing some pretty good basketball. So the opponents are coming. The difficult schedule's coming in the month of February. This is phase two. All right, the team moves on to this phase. They've gotten through the first phase to me, and now I think it's going to be fun watching how this all unfolds in February.
I want to backtrack just real quick. The Timberwolves split before the Clippers contest. Two winnable games, again, when you're talking about, and I forgot to tell you that if the season ended today, if the season ended today, the Cavs would be in the playoffs, and that's a very important thing.
Are we in the playoff or are we in the playing tournament?
No, seventh. Seventh. Very close. I think the Knicks are right on us. Toronto right there. So, obviously, it's early. But, again, I want to go back to the Timberwolves game in that Sunday night. That was a game, and Austin Carr at the end of the game, I thought, brought up a great point in that that's, in the end, the Cavs rallied 9-0 run in the last 2 minutes and didn't catch up. And Austin said, this is the part of the game it really hurts, when you knew you could have beat that team and you didn't, and that last 2 minutes kind of say, man, we should have had that one. That was a game maybe later in the year that you might say, should have took it.
Sure, but That said, I think the team felt that way too, and come back with a real nice response the next night.
Yeah.
And come home and beat the Timberwolves. Darius Garland, to me, was the player who most epitomized that. You know, he went to the coaching staff after that first game of the doubleheader and said, "I didn't like the way that looked or felt," and they talked it over. And the message from JB Bickerstaff, he told us, was, "You're going to have guys coming at you every night." And we know that part, but he said, "You're going to have to play with that same edge and that same, not anger, but that same intensity that guys are coming after you." And boy, was that on display in the tail end of that twin bill, as Garland dished out 11 assists and had some critical buckets down the stretch. And when you're talking about a season where you want to see players progress and get to that level where they're going to be a productive part of this core, Garland's already productive, but he's taken those next steps in this just his sophomore campaign. So I think those are all good signs for this Cavalier team.
So the Cavs obviously got that second game. They wanted to get that one anyway, but I'm sure Coach talked to them before the game that they wanted to get that one specifically for your birthday, Rafa.
Yeah. You know, John made fun of me on Caps HQ because they actually put me on Humongotron, and of course nobody told me about it. So they put me up there for like 20 seconds talking, like pumping about my birthday, and then when I look up, they took the camera away.
And you're kind of a shy person too, so
I never like doing things.
That's the irony. Every time he's on there, otherwise he's looking up within a second and playing at the camera.
Wait,
hey, see, Los Cavs, and on his own birthday, he missed the whole show.
So we just wanted to wish you a Wine and Gold Radio happy birthday to our birthday boy, Rafa Hernandez Brito. You'll be getting spanked later. I might bring D-Mac by for that one.
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday,
dear Rafa.
Happy birthday to you.
And also, you guys have talked about these virtual wine tastings that you do. Why can't we do one of those for the show? Why can't I be a part of it? You and John Michael get lit on these things, and
I've never been lit on one of those things. And B, that's Rafa's baby, not mine.
You know, the best one was, we do wine, just so our listeners know, we've been trying to keep not only our fans engaged, but also our partners engaged. So we've been doing these virtual wine tastings since March, since everything stopped.
Mm-hmm.
And we get Knocking Point, which is the new wine partner of the Cavs. And everybody that is invited to the wine tasting gets 2-3 bottles of the product. And then the good part is that it's supposed to be only like 15 minutes of talking about the product. But obviously, when you get people talking about their product, like me, I'll go on and on and on.
Yes.
But they talk about the red wine, the card. You know, I don't know much about wine or bourbon or tequila, which was my favorite, the tequila tasting. And you do. I did twice, a little bit above the limit of my ability to consume, was when we were drinking tequila and AC was in the event, and he called me out because he kept seeing me on the screen, and because these are Zoom meetings, and I literally drank like almost the whole bottle of Patron. And then when we did the one with Bacardi, and we did like Cuba Libre, you know, rum and coke.
Mm-hmm.
That's the name of the drink.
Mm-hmm.
Cuba Libre.
Mm-hmm.
So but they're fun. I think they're good to engage, and we should get John a couple of bottles of wine.
John,
we'll get you.
How about the old boy Joe G?
Well, no, you and I will have him here. I'll talk to the people at Knocking Point. Maybe they want to come in and join us at Wine and Gold Radio.
Okay, well, maybe next time. I'm kind of glad actually that we're not drinking today, because we have a special guest in the next segment, Mark Cobra Cashman. The man. I mean, last week we talked with El Jefe, Len Komorowski, the president, CEO of the Cavs and the Monsters, and charge everything. Cobra, I'm trying to think. He's the director of team operations. I'm trying to think of a scenario which would explain. Cobra is in charge of everything on the road. Everything on the road.
And at home.
And at home. He takes care of everything. So Cobra, for example, if we went on this road trip, if we went on a current road trip, and between shoot around and the game that night and leaving after the game, if Cobra went to the bar and got kind of blacked out or something.
He went MIA.
Or went MIA, it would be like as if you left a bunch of fifth graders on a field trip in Washington. That's how useless we would all be. Without Cobra, that team cannot function on the road. I'm being serious. If Cobra disappeared for a couple hours on the road, things would go haywire.
The amount of stuff that he has to take care of.
Unbelievable.
Beyond what everybody else thinks that the person in charge of team operations takes care of, is beyond me. But I think when we have him on, I want to ask him about two stories that are really awesome, which is, do you guys remember the black uniform that we wore in 2016 for the championship? Those are the ones that LeBron wasn't too fond of at the beginning because the sleeves were too tight.
And I know
there's a story about a seamstress that had to be called in. And also the trophy that was a puzzle of 16 pieces that every player had a piece. And after every W in the playoff, they would put in a piece in the puzzle until we won. And T. Lou was the last one to put his last piece. So I wonder what that puzzle is.
Yeah,
obviously,
like
was
know,
completed.
Yeah. Is it maybe it's like Cobra's house in the basement or something?
Only our two cameras that's been with us for the whole time know about what we're about to do. Well, we're going to unveil it to the whole world. This was our inspiration throughout the whole playoffs.
Wait, RJ.
So listen, Cole, you got the box?
Right.
But I'm going to explain to y'all. We call this thing a puzzle piece. We had 16 puzzle pieces to complete the whole puzzle. 15 puzzle pieces for all 15 guys that made sacrifices. In the last puzzle piece.
What?
Go to Coach Lou.
Yeah!
The last puzzle piece. It always seems to work out. Hey, you gave me the whole game. Hey. Come on.
I don't know, but he's definitely going to know about it, and I'm sure you got plenty of other questions for him.
I have a million questions for Cobra. We probably won't get through all of those. We'll be back in a couple minutes on Wine and Gold Radio. We'll have Mark Cobra Cashman. I'm really looking forward to this guy, our special guest.
Wine and Gold Radio.
Hi, this is Tim Elkhorn. I listen to a lot of different things, but I never listen to Wine and Gold Radio.
There's more of this.
Wine and Gold Radio.
After this, on Wine and Gold Radio.
The Cav City Collection is now available online at cav.com/shop. Rep the land with jerseys, hats, tees, and more, inspired by the Cav City Edition uniforms.
Love running the lane, left side dance, pow, with two hands.
The Cavaliers, in a partnership with the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, introduced the team City Edition uniform, featuring a design and style that reflects the grit, attitude, and spirit of Cleveland's rock and roll roots. See the whole collection at cav.com/shop.
Hi, I'm Campy Russell, and I never, never, never listen to Wine and Gold Radio because I'm from Michigan.
Now, back to Wine and Gold Radio.
Bang! Hey, everybody, and welcome back to Wine and Gold Radio.
And Gold Radio.
We have a new theme this week. It's pretty exciting.
Yeah.
With us now, our special guest right here is Director of Team Operations, and that is a super fancy title, and it still doesn't even come close to what our guest does, Mark Cashman. Cobra. Who the hell is Mark Cashman? Welcome to the show, Cobra, the Cavs Director of Team Operations. Cobra, welcome to the show.
Thanks. Thanks for having me.
How many people still call you Mark, Cobra?
Not many. not many.
I wonder, is it only Cavs people that call you Cobra, or does like...
My kids. My kids call me that, which is... I don't know if it's okay, but they do.
John wishes his kids would call him Cobra.
Yeah, no, there was a story that, so the lone year that Shaq was on the roster, so I think it was the 2009-2010 season, his manager, uncle, security, Uncle Jerome.
Right.
This is about March, early March, I want to say. And he was in my office at the arena. And he saw a box on the floor, and it said Mark Cashman. It was written in Sharpie. And so you got to remember now, it's March. So, like, we'd met. We were, you know, three quarters of the way through the regular season. And he starts saying the name Mark Cashman. Says it three, maybe four times. And I'm not paying any attention. I'm at my desk. And then he turns and says, Cobra, he said, who is Mark Cashman? He said, I see that name on the rooming list on the road all the time. And he said, who is that? And I said, that's me. He said, get out of here. He said, no, I thought you were Cobra. I said, who names their kid Cobra that loves their child? So anyway, it's sort of an alias, I suppose. So,
I thought you were about to tell us that Uncle Jerome originated the nickname Cobra.
No.
Would have been a story in itself.
No, that would have been. No, that's it was something in college a long time ago. It's not a very good story. There's really nothing to it. It's not dirty, it's not, you know, salacious. It's very benign. But I was in a fraternity, and so the rule was, if somebody gave you a nickname, particularly if they figured that you didn't like it, that meant that it was all the more that they were going to call you that. And so it just sort of stuck. It meant nothing. It was really, like I said, it's not a good story.
What fraternity were you a member of?
A Delta Tau Delta.
Ooh, I'm a Sammy.
Oh, you are?
Yeah.
Okay.
I actually practice the Greek life. I mean, at school.
Or the geek life. And the geek life.
You could do way worse in terms of nicknames. I mean, that's a pretty bad.
Yeah, that's a pretty good
badass
nickname.
Yeah, right? I mean, I when people have asked where it came from, and I tell the same, you know, basic backstory, and I joke and say that I'm the opposite of anything that would strike fear in anyone. So, that's as good as I can really do. Hey, every now and again, I'll have a moment where I get upset, but not too much anymore.
We've seen those. Old for that. Yes, we've seen those from time to time. All of them are well needed and well timed.
Every now and again, every now and again, it's usually a nonverbal. It's a look, and probably best to just don't ask me what I'm thinking at that moment.
Let's ask you this question then. For those, you know, we talked about it in the previous segment, what you do, all of the wide variety of things you do on a regular basis. What are the one or two things that bother Cobra the most? When you go into that locker room and see what, or when somebody does what sets off Mark Cobra Cashman?
So I'm very organized,
right?
Very structured.
Yes,
perhaps rigid. and so to that extent, things that are out of place and things that are messy and things that are not organized, I struggle with. And so there's the only time every year before training camp, I'll address the team and just simply politely say, hey guys, look, it's your locker room, you know, just kind of the groundskeeper here, just, you know, replace your divots, if you will, right? So let's, you know, pick up, there's a big bin put it in there, just, you know, treat it with respect, and that way, you know, we can all get along. But don't just leave stuff around. I shouldn't have to pick up. And it's not just me. I mean, it's Willie, my assistant, and it's actually more Willie than me. Just don't, you know, just be respectful. And so there was the 14-15 season. We had a random shoot around at the arena downtown. I don't know what it was for. And the locker room was trashed. Trashed. I still keep a picture of it in my equipment room here in Independence. And I was that's the most I've been upset with just sort of the collective group. And so the next day at practice, I asked Coach Blatt if I could say something to the team before we started practice. And usually when I come out of my office, you know, it's never good news, because it's like some travel related thing. It's like, cause I'm not out there during practice. That's when I can get things done. Cause They're not asking me for stuff. And so, yeah, when I come out, it's sort of like the Grim Reaper type of thing. And so I came out and I had this picture in my hand, and I was steamed, and was like, look, it's never going to be like this again. I promise you, if it is like that again, I will leave it like that. You know, I'll leave it exactly how you left it for me. And I don't want to do that. I don't want to be that. I don't want to be in here raising my voice. I've never done this before. And so it was kind of a collection. There were some younger guys that had been with us, because that was LeBron's first year back from Miami.
Right.
And so it was a mix. We had like Tristan and Kyrie and Dion, and they had never seen me do that before. I had never done that before. And then there was LeBron, who had never seen that before. And then you had veterans like James Jones and Mike Miller and Brendan Haywood. And so it just was sort of this young and old mixture. And they were all looking at me like sort of in disbelief, like, I can't believe, this idiot is just, on a rant like this. So anyway, but to that point where LeBron has always been so, it's been great for me, is because, he's not like that. That actually, that day he didn't come to shoot around, he was sick. And I think he would have, if he would have seen that, it would have never been that way either. So in that regard, that's probably one of the reasons we get along, is because he's structured, he's routine oriented. He, likes things to be a certain way. And you guys have been around him. And so I think from that standpoint, it meshed well, because I don't like a lot of, if things are disorganized, I get real chippy. Sorry. So that's a long answer, J. Mike.
No, that's a good answer.
I know Brendan Haywood made it. We released somebody or traded somebody. I know later in that season we traded Dion and we traded, gosh, who else? Alex Kirk.
Alex Kirk, yeah.
And there was maybe a third.
Lou Edmondson.
We were in Philly when that happened. And so I don't know if there was a – but B. Haywood started this sort of urban legend that those guys, or that Dion might have been the reason that the locker room was in sorts and I got him boosted. Just something like that, just to have some fun, not obviously not the truth, but – anyway, so
I would love to see that moment when Cobra comes out of his office onto the practice court.
It was great. Like, some of us saw it. It was fantastic.
Oh, so you witnessed it.
We've been through some of those. Yeah.
If it's sort of an overarching philosophy of mine anyway. I feel like if I do my job effectively, you shouldn't even know I exist and I'm not there.
It's like a ref. Like
a referee. So if I do it correctly. And I don't say it often, but it is. It's something I think if it's done the right way, at least in my mind, then you shouldn't know I'm there. And if I have to come out, it's usually for a bad reason.
Yeah. I'm hearing like the Enter Sandman song.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's the Grim Reaper, all right.
Hey, Kobe, you said, you talked about Shaq's Uncle Jerome, right? I mean, in your position,
yes,
you get to interact with a lot of folks, all right?
Yeah.
You've been around here for a long time, for a lot of years. If you had to list or tell us maybe the 1, 2, 3 most interesting, unique personalities or stories that, I mean, you've got to have volumes of stories from your experience here, but some of the things that others would not believe that you witnessed throughout your time here with the Cavaliers.
Okay, so yeah, I'll stick to stories.
Yeah.
So this is a very memorable trip. Now it I know it predates Rafa, it predates J Mike. I don't know about Joe G, but it was LeBron's rookie year.
Not on that trip. I wasn't traveling his rookie year.
It's hard to predate
Joe
G, but yes.
Okay. So LeBron's rookie year, back then for preseason, you could play a max of 8 games and a minimum of 6 games. And we were slated to play 7. And they were 6 road games and 1 wow. at the Gund at the time. And so the business side, you know, obviously knew that we could probably, you know, we could get an 8th game, a second home game, and it would obviously, you know, sell extraordinarily well. You know, it was LeBron's rookie year. So in order to thread the needle, the only availability on the arena calendar to get it done was going to create a back-to-back for us. So we were going to play at home, and then we were playing on the road the next night. We were playing Toronto. So Paul Silas was our coach, and they – I won't say the guy's name. He's not with the team anymore anyway, but it doesn't matter. So he went to Paul Silas and Jim Paxson, the GM, and, you know, pitched the idea. And Paul said, yeah, that's fine. I mean – we'll play it back to back. It's Toronto. No big deal. But wait, what they failed to tell Paul was that this game was against Toronto in St. John's, Newfoundland, the easternmost city in North America. It was a 3.5-hour flight, and we lost an hour and a half. So these guys have their Newfoundland has their own time zone. I didn't know this. And clearly nobody else in our decision making camp was told that they're on their own time zone. So they're a half hour east of Atlantic. So we take off. Again, it's a 3.5-hour flight, and we lose an hour and a half.
Oh my God.
Oh.
Okay. So we gotta clear customs in St. John's. And Silas gets randomly selected for like a full cavity search. It's like a 5-piece on the clock. And he's a bit annoyed at this point. So, you know, it's like I said, there's a 5 on the clock, maybe 5:30 in the morning. And my bus driver is a native. He's from St. John's, and he wants to give us a tour of the town. And so this guy's taking us through like the neighborhood he grew up in. I mean, we're on like these switchbacks in, you know, we're not taking a direct path to the hotel at all. He's pointing out the sites, you know, where the tree that he fell from, you know, and turned his ankle in elementary school. And at this point, Paul looks at me, he's sitting across from me on the bus, and he says, who is it again? Who's that guy that books these preseason games? I told him. He called him and left him kind of a dirty, kind of a nasty message on his voice message in the office. And that's when I leaned forward to the bus driver and I said, look, you got to just get us to the hotel, all right? I get it. I know you're proud. It's a beautiful city in the middle of the night, but we got to get some rest.
We play in a few hours.
Fast forward. Yeah. So fast forward to game time. And the place was packed. Because Maple Leafs and the Raptors are owned by it's whatever the holding company is, and so they own the Maple Leafs too. So it was like one of the minor league outposts for the Maple Leafs, and so it was like maybe 10,000 people. It was packed, and they were good. Like they had Tracy McGrady, they had Vince Carter. They were good, and so. For whatever reason, something happened and the building was too warm. They didn't have the air was too hot. And then when you got all the fans in there, it was melting the ice underneath the floor. And the condensation was such you could take your hand, you know, you could do your name in person and you could see it on the floor. It was bad. It was really bad. So we come in the locker room, and the collective decision is we are not playing this game. No way. And Silas says to, you know, I think Zydrunas was a captain, and I don't know who the other one was or if it was just Z, but basically it's like, we're going to go back out there, do the layup line, give it 20 minutes and pretend like we're getting this game in, but we are not getting this game in. And so both teams were kind of synced with, we're going to make it look like we're trying, but no way are we doing this. So go. And then at that point, Paul says Cobra's going to have just go straight to the bus. Cause he's like, when these people find out, it's going to be a mutiny. So he said, do not come back to the locker room. As soon as they call this game, do a straight line to the bus. So it was me and Max, our trainer, and Stan Keller's our strength coach. And we were taking the players' stuff, their personal effects, and we were putting them on the buses. And I called the plane, and I'm like, yo, get out there, get us some pizzas, get the bird gassed up, because we got to get out of Dodge. And so everything is all synced and coordinated, and they call the game. And it was, you know, people were mad. They were really mad. And so we're going back to the bus, and at that time it was, you know, we could kind of get all the players and the coaches on one bus. And so we had two buses, but the main bus was where everybody was. And so I was trying to collect, again, I'm a guy that's rigid, and I like to fold my stuff. I just don't want to throw it in bags. And so I've got equipment bags up on the bus, and I'm trying to collect shoes and uniforms and stuff. And I'm just trying to get, because I know I got a 3.5 hour flight back. You know, and so things were I was a little sped up, and things were disorganized and chaotic, and that's not really my strength. And I remember that LeBron handed me his stuff. It was folded up, his uniform, his shorts, everything was folded up, and his shoes were on top of it, and he handed it to me. And that always stayed with me. And, you know, and I said something to him the next day. You know, I thanked him, and I just made a mention of it. And he told me why. I mean, it's not like a big, great story, so I won't share it. But that's where that mesh kind of, you know, he's that way too. So, but yeah, that was wild. We went all the way up, all that stuff. And then that game never took place. And for about 5 or 6 years, the Raptors were chasing us down. They wanted to make that game up in the worst way, the worst way. And we were like, no way. We'll play you, and we'll go to New Brunswick. That's as far as we'll go.
It's like the opening scene from Raiders of the Lost Ark. You guys are like running for the plane. Big Z lead the way out of the woods.
Yes, yes. Yeah, and so funny story about Z was, as he was walking to the bus, the way, and again, some of these smaller type arenas, there were concession stands for the lower level, and we basically were walking, like, you'd have to cut through a concession line if you were going to go to the bus. And so, like, the general public, the concessions and the bathrooms were down on the level that we were at. And so, you know, they had like those bike racks, and they had security outside the locker room, but it was an old school arena. And so the fans could be in the concourse and see us going to the bus. And so as Zydrunas is walking to the bus, you know, somebody, you know, I think it was a little kid's like, he's like, don't go, wait, please come back. And he said something like, you know, get your stuff together, kid, and we'll come back. So that's a travel story that always sticks with me, just because of everything. Because you don't know. It's like, it's a numbers game. Every time you travel, something, you know, mechanical, weather, something biblical could happen.
Yeah.
So that was just our turn that night.
And what are guys, you know, I mean, again, you've been around, we both been around so long with these guys on the road. How are things different now than they used to be? And how are guys different now?
Well, I mean, the guys are, I think a lot of teams will kind of take on the personality of your head coach. Mm. And it's probably that way in a lot of sports. And so, in our case, JB is one of the most flexible guys I've been around. He and Tilu are extraordinary with their time, but also just their adaptability. And so, especially right now with everything that's taking place, that adaptability is it's paramount. And so if you're going to have someone that's going to, I'm not saying that sweating the small stuff isn't important, because that's kind of the space I work in. But this is, if ever there was a season to make sure that you can just move past some of the things that are way out of your control, this is the one. And so from that standpoint, like, you know, our players have been phenomenal with all of the changes. It's kind of like quicksand, you know. I mean, you know, you're a memo away from another shift, and it's all well intended. It's to keep you know, the train on the tracks and to keep it moving. So the league's done a great job. It just, the, you know, every city we go to, it's a new construct. There's about 6 to 8 different details that I list out with the city, whether it's a local restriction. We were in Boston, and you couldn't have more than 25 people in a function room, regardless of the size, for more than 90 minutes. So the dinner we had, we just split it up, group one, group two. And New York, we couldn't do any in-person, any indoor dining or gathering. So in New York, where we just were last week, all the food that we had to be in a to-go container, and you had to take it to your room.
Wow.
So that's different now, you know, versus other jurisdictions we've gone. And then, you know, there's the privatization of fitness centers. And so in some places where there may be we haven't been to Miami yet, but I already know what that answer is.
Probably.
So you guys travel. There's that beautiful Equinox, and that's the fitness center at the Four Seasons Miami. Well, that's a non-starter. There's no way I can
close
say,
it.
Hey, for our stretch of days we're there, nobody can use the Equinox. I mean, why? I'm not even going to bother having that conversation when I know the answer. So then what I'll do is I'll take a function space, and we'll get equipment brought in, and we'll create our own fitness center. It'll be makeshift now, but so some cities we have to do that, others we don't. Orlando, you guys know that Ritz that we stay at, that resort's great, but it shares with the JW Marriott, and again, there's no way for we were there 4 nights. There's no way for 5 straight days I can have that thing completely privatized for us, and no other guest can use it. So what we did was had equipment. They were kind enough to take equipment out of their fitness center, and then we had some brought in, and we just made a fitness center. But it's all those kinds of things that, you know, that and so, hey guys, we just got to this city, and this is where you got to get your bags. This is where we're going to come in. This is our ingress and egress. This is the local restrictions on food. This is the fitness center. Just things like that. Things that you would take for granted.
before we let you go, if we're gonna talk cap stories, we have to have championship stories, right? In the mix. Can you talk about do you have anything to do with the puzzle that everybody had a piece for?
Oh, the puzzle.
Or you want to talk about the black shirt that didn't fit LeBron's the sleeve a little? I heard something about a seamstress that had to be flown to San Francisco.
So those two things would be. So the puzzle, I think the puzzle, my understanding was that was James Jones and Griff. I think those two were the brains behind that. And so the puzzle was made. They did it in Michigan, and I think it was the guys at one of the family of companies up in Michigan. And so I got the box and the pieces, but what really scared me was that, you know, I mean, this is an original, there's only one. And so then the pieces, you know, we only had 16 pieces too. And so, it was the bag that, like, when I would get home, I would bring it inside. And I did everything I could never to let that bag out of my sight, because I was so scared. And I would double and triple check. So when we go, every time we go on the road, and at most it would be two games, I would always make sure that I had the next two pieces. But I just had a whole thing that I did, and I was constantly checking those pieces. I was constantly checking the box, and I had the box. With bubble tape, and I had all this extra bubble tape because I didn't want the box to fall apart. And I mean, the puzzle was that was kind of near and dear to me. That was like,
where is that? Where is it now? Who has it?
So we took the box itself kind of took on some moisture. it got pretty wet in Toronto in game six, and that was only water. And then obviously when we won, it took on some other moisture.
Got a little wet, yes.
And, yeah, and so it started to warp a little bit, and the box was kind of beat up. But we took the pieces and they're in the locker room at the facility in Independence, and it's constructed under plastic, and so you can see each of the pieces, and then next to it is the picture of us at the White House.
Awesome.
Oh, nice.
So it's really really good. And then we had a new box for the subsequent 2 years after. And I still have that box, and I still have the pieces. So hopefully we get a chance to use those again sometime in my time. So that, and then the sleeves on LeBron's jersey, he really liked that. Everybody really liked that jersey. But for him, he felt like it was constricting around the shoulder, and he didn't like it. And the first time we wore it, I don't remember who we were playing, but he got mad and he basically ripped from the seams in the armpits. So it was sort of like open. And so all it did was just give him that, it just opened it up so he wasn't restricted in his shoulders. So then I actually worked with seamstress at the Browns. And what she did was she rebuilt the sleeves on all of his jerseys so that basically it wasn't tight and capped around his bicep. It was loose like a t-shirt.
Yep.
And that's what she did, was basically just rebuilt the shoulders on all of his jerseys.
Now, was it your idea to wear black on game five?
I mean, yes, it was. The way the rules worked with the NBA is there were certain jerseys that they didn't want you to wear. They didn't want you wearing like a hardwood classic in the playoffs. They wanted you to stick with like your core uniforms. So the way we would do it is we would wear, we'd start with white at home, and then we went navy on the road. And basically, once we lost, then there would be a conversation. So, but I knew I could wear black, but I could only wear it four times. So when we lost game four in Toronto, wearing navy blue, and the series was 2-2, I knew that if I went back to black for game five in Toronto, if I went to that for the first time, I might fall one short in the finals. Not that I think anyone's going to, you know, at that point, I don't think the league's really going to do much, you know, okay, fine us. But that was why. So, I mean, I talked it through with LeBron, because he was kind of the conduit on that stuff. And so we're like, well, we'll bring blue back to Toronto for game six. And we won. So then we started with blue in San Francisco or Oakland, I should say. And anyway, we just stuck with it for games one and two. And after we lost game two, we were flying back home. And I just thought, you know what, if we get a chance to come back for game five, you know, I'll just bring black. And so it was that. I mean, there's nothing. But if only it was that simple.
Yeah, but you know, hey, yeah. It took a life of its own, though.
Yeah.
Why didn't you think of that earlier? Yeah.
Yeah, blue and the color of jersey. And so it when we won game five, again, I think just the superstitious nature of sports, there were some people, some very powerful forces that wanted us to wear black for game six. And it didn't happen. It would have been very difficult. And it would have required the cooperation of the other team.
I know the fans were wearing black because we gave away a t-shirt for the fans that, you know, the CLE.
That was another reason. I mean, there was a lot of reasons why there was a groundswell to wear black.
Yeah.
One of the problems too was that when it was starting to really take hold, we were probably somewhere over the Midwest. We were flying back to Cleveland. And so, you know, on our, we had the Wi-Fi. And so on our phones, everybody, you know, was pinging around about, you know, let's do this. This is a great idea. And I'm like, yeah, but Golden State's about ready to take off. And I know they've got blue and that's not going to work. And the league isn't going to let that happen. And so again,
But it was a good call, though.
It ended well.
yeah, everything turned out okay.
Not too bad.
Before let's go, Kobe, you talked about Oakland. You got within the next, I guess, 72 hours or so, you guys will be leaving for the first West Coast trip in the COVID era. So what do you have coming up on this trip? You have to plan a Super Bowl party for Sunday. you have a long way to go.
So instead of flying at 3, which is what we typically do, we're going to fly at noon. And so Super Bowl should be, I think, 4:30 Mountain Time, because that's Phoenix's Mountain Time right now.
Yep.
So, just about the time, again, you know, if everything goes well, we don't have any hiccups with the plane and weather, we should get to the hotel about 3:30. Everybody have about an hour to get ready, and then we'll have a gathering, a socially distanced gathering in Phoenix for the Super Bowl. And then after that, you know, Denver, Portland, Los Angeles, and San Francisco, those are going to be some of the most restrictive places that we're going to go with the number of cases they have and everything that they've got going on. So I think that those are going to be a lot like Los Angeles, especially. I mean, from everything I've heard, and you know, we've seen the Lakers and Clippers now in the last 2 weeks. Their people have talked about just what a, you know, how quiet things are. So we're not permitted to leave the hotel except for basketball business. So we're staying downtown, first time ever.
No, no montage.
I've never stayed downtown. Ooh. Not even. Not even back when the Clippers played at the sports arena.
Wow.
Never stayed downtown.
I only have one request.
Sure.
Could you make the action on the Super Bowl digital so we can take part of it?
Yeah, so Big Dan Giroux is going to do square, so I'll have him loop you in.
Please.
I think with the golf league and just some of the other things that I've got going on the side, it's nice when people jump in and just offer to take that sort of gaming angle off of my plate.
Just don't let Spiro take it over.
And I do appreciate it. Yeah, but Steve's still trying to figure out the confidence pool from December. He's still trying to figure out how he's supposed to rate the Arkansas TCU game that got canceled.
Yeah.
Mark, Cobra, you're the best. Yeah, thanks for visiting with us.
Cobra, thank you so much for visiting.
Guys, thank you.
Take care, man.
Mark Cobra Cashman.
We could probably do 4 or 5 shows with him.
So, I mean, I
we didn't talk about the golf pool that John Michael loves so much.
we will be back with segment 3. Take a nice look ahead. Like we heard from Cobra, we got a nice long road trip coming up. West Coast, the first one of the year. First one since the coronavirus kind of took over. So we'll be back with segment 3, and I think we have a song to start out segment 3. I'm pretty sure.
Am I allowed to sing it yet or no?
Go ahead.
Wine and Gold Radio. I don't know which one I like better. Wine and Gold Radio.
Let's
check it out. We'll let the fans decide. We'll let the listeners be the judge.
We'll be back with Wine and Gold Radio right after this.
Hi, this is Colin Sexton from the Cleveland Cavaliers, and you're listening to Wine and Gold Radio, Cleveland, Ohio, America.
There's more of this.
That was delicious.
After this, on Wine and Gold Radio.
Designed from the land, for the land, the Team Shop has introduced a new in-house apparel line called the Land Collective. The first series is inspired by the 2020 NBA Draft. Each series will focus on a specific theme and feature exclusive pieces that will only be available while supplies last. Get these new looks from the Team Shop today, only at cavs.com/shop. For more style inspiration and to be the first to know about upcoming collections, follow at Land Collective on Instagram.
Wine and Gold Radio. Wine and Gold Radio. Wine and Gold Radio. Wine and Gold Radio. Oh, here the Cavs go again. So let's talk to our favorite friends. J. Mike, Rafa, and there's Joe. Wine and Gold Radio. Oh, Wine and Gold Radio. Wine and Gold Radio. Wine and Gold Radio. Wine and Gold Radio.
Now, back to Wine and Gold Radio.
You say it's your birthday. It's my birthday, too.
I tell you, if there's one thing Clevelanders love, one thing, it's a good polka, baby.
And that's one thing I learned from Len Komorowski, our guest last week, that Cleveland is the place where polka lives.
El Jefe.
Yeah. Well, you know, he asked about what genre he was part of, and he said polka. So I went on Twitter and requested anybody who knows a polka band to let me know, because I had a favor. And this kid, TJ, he replied right away, put me in touch with Jake, who I understand is the legend, the myth of polka here in the Cleveland
and
area.
And he's the leader of the Chardon Polka Band?
Yes.
Oh, man, really impressive, I have to say. I almost wanted to kind of get up and do a little dance.
I'm now questioning what will be the next genre for the challenge to go get.
Like, I don't know, Zydeco, we got heavy metal.
We should do a rock and roll one.
Because we should.
We're in the theme where rock and roll was born.
Exactly. We should explore all genres. And by the way, impressive turnaround. Last week, El Jefe asked for polka. The next week, Michael Clayton lines up some polka, baby. That was nice. That's very nice.
I love it.
Hey, before we move on, before we look ahead at next week's games, we have to get serious for a second. I really mean it. We lost one of the legends of Cleveland radio and a great guy and a good friend, Les Levine, from More Sports. Les Levine passed away this morning. I just wanted to pass along our condolences from Wine and Gold Radio, from myself. Rafa, I knew you knew him right when you first got here.
You know what's amazing to me? And you always had said this to me a couple of times since we met, is are you cooler than you're supposed to be?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, are you cooler than you have to
be? When I came to Cleveland, he was literally the first person that actually took interest in the fact that the Cavaliers were broadcasting their games in Spanish, and he interviewed me. I have absolutely no idea who he was. And then I learned what a legend he was here in terms of TV, radio, cable, and everything, how everything was evolutionizing. And I was really, really, like, honored that he actually took interest in, like, real interest in the fact that, you know, it was a Spanish kid doing Cavs game.
Yeah.
And I think that says so much about what you hear about now, about Les, about who he was and how everybody respected his work and respected how much he battled, because he was a battler, and he really went at it hard with everything he had to battle with. And you know, our thoughts and prayers go to his kids and his family, his wife, and just a really nice dude.
A great guy. And there was a great point you brought up in that he was, again, a Cleveland legend, a radio legend, but he always welcomed new voices and new people into the mix. Les never thought, well, you know, I'm a legend, I'm, you know, holding up the fort. He always welcomed in new young voices and new young talent. I always loved and respected Les Levine, and just want to say, like you said, our prayers up to him.
Give me a how come quickie on WHK.
How come?
Give me a how come
quickie.
Should
I dump that?
No, on WHK.
How come Bill Belichick fills me with the urge to defecate?
Give me a how come quickie. Go ahead on WHK.
How come when I think of the Indians, I think of inspiration, and when I think of the Cavs, I think of determination and perspiration, but when I think of the Browns, I think of constipation?
Give me a how come quickie on WHK. Go ahead. I need a quickie. Go ahead. Let's go this way. You're on WHK. Give me a quickie.
How come Mike from Captain Tony's only had all you can eat, pizza and pasta tonight?
Give me a how come quickie on WHK.
How come Bill Belichick coaches like, yeah.
Give me a how come quickie on WHK.
How come when I, Gerald Irons Bentley, want to see Hollywood stars, the Dog Kitties, I watch Melrose Place. But when I want to see my partner, his itis, Rod Ryder, the T-guard, the point guard, I go.
He lost it. Give me a how come quickie on WHK. Give me a how come quickie. Go ahead.
How come Mike Fratello isn't running for president? I'd vote for him.
I need a quickie on WHK.
Let's look ahead at the week we have. Wrapping up the four-game homestand, back-to-back with the heavyweight Bucks on Friday and Saturday night. Not going to be easy.
What do you think, John? It's a good way to warm up for the West Coast trip.
And Giannis and company coming to town. You know what's interesting, guys? The Bucks have not looked Buck-like on the road this season. Just 4-6 coming to town. So we'll see back-to-back. I mean, Giannis always a challenge. Chris Middleton's, you know, we know what he can bring as well. One of the, you know, quietest semi-superstars in the NBA. But no question a challenge. I mean, this is one of the elite teams of the Eastern Conference. Man, you want to talk about getting ready for a trip. Couple of 9 o'clock starts, then 3 10 o'clock starts.
Oofa.
On the five game road trip. And Rafa, for you, I mean, for us, we're accustomed to being with the team, which means that our bodies adjust.
7 o'clock.
Tip time 7:30. Now the pregame and postgame guys are going to be laughing at us, saying, "You see, now we, you know, this is what we have to deal with when you guys are out on the West Coast trying to make sense after midnight."
Let me ask you a question. Have you planned how the game day nap's going to go that day? Because that's going to throw me off completely.
Yeah, it's a big question right now. It's a big question. I'm kind of proud of my nap game, but it's going to have to adjust here. We'll see what happens.
But I mean,
we could, you know, conceivably still be asleep at 6 o'clock.
I hate it that the nap time is going to – I'm going to have to also adjust my meal time for this 10 o'clock game. So it's strange.
Yeah, it's going to be a wild one. Get your sleep. drink your coffee, do what you got to do. First game in Talking Stick Arena, so that should be.
I always say selfie stick
arena,
and then by the second time I come back from a timeout, back to Phoenix.
So we got a big lineup coming up next week. Some late night games. By the way, when I was a kid, I used to love late night games. Being able to stay up late, and it seemed like something was happening that you weren't allowed to do or see. I can say the same for
I love it when the Yankees are on the West Coast.
Love it. Yeah.
I love the late night games.
It feels like a little holiday.
But there's nothing better than being on the West Coast, catching your local game at 4 p.m.
Yes. Or,
and then watching you wake up and it's like the sports at 10 a.m.
Yeah, it's bonus. It's great.
Yeah. Sundays on the West Coast.
It's the best. NFL,
10 a.m. is amazing.
Yeah.
Although you get to 9 or 10 at night and then you're looking around like, what am I doing? There's nothing else to watch.
Well, Clevelanders will not have to worry about that next week. Come 9, 10 o'clock, we will have Cavs action. It's going to be really exciting. First long West Coast trip of the year. I'm ready for it. Wine and Gold Radio, Episode 5. How do you think we did, Rob?
I love that. We debuted a new jingle from the Chardon Polka Band. Jake, thank you, Jake and TJ, for that.
Yes.
We had Mark Cashman, Cobra.
I can't even find myself calling him Mark. It's hard to say Mark Cashman.
But that's his name. And we heard stories from our championship years and our original years. Mm-hmm. And also... A big thanks to Jared Allen for going to J Mike's house and kind of like fiddling with his internet and stuff. And
definitely.
All the technological stuff.
Thanks, Jay, for heading over to J Mike's house and building him a new computer in between breaks there.
I can't wait till we have him on, because the last time they asked him whether or not he broke apart a toaster, he wasn't too happy.
He was insulted by that.
AC and I brought that up on the air last night.
He wasn't too proud of it. Like,
he's like, hey, it wasn't a toaster, right? I mean, it was a...
It's a big difference from a toaster to a computer that then I put together.
It was a complex computer, right, exactly. He's like, please, everybody, please, get
so
it right.
We want to thank Jared Allen for heading out to J. Mike's house, fixing his computer.
Yes.
As always, I got to thank the Golden Boy, Matt Gold, Joe Fritchin, Casey Coolis. Man, I wish my name was Casey Coolis. Joe Cayone, Peter Berman, the Chardon Polka Band.
Yes.
D-Mac, the guy who kind of makes everything run behind the
scenes. Can we make a show one day? What is it exactly that D-Mac does that you have to thank him after every show?
D-Mac does things behind the scenes. He does the stuff that you don't see. He's like our special guest, Cobra, in that what he does, it's not everything you see. So we want to thank our special guest, Cobra, and, of course, the dynamic duo, Dirty Kurt. And the one and only, Big Daddy, Marty Allen.
Let's go, Big Daddy.
As always, good night, Freddie Mac, wherever you are.
Yeah! You gotta be kidding me! Life is about do-overs! Don't look at it, but it should count! 120 apiece! You have to be kidding me!
You're listening to Wine and Gold Radio.
Hasta la vista, baby!
Ohio. Ow! America.
Everybody stand up and cheer.
Ooh, let me get that taste.